a less aggressive policy, I think, would have been fine 20 years ago.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 2nd, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the climate educator and author, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. And we're also joined by Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, 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 good. So, over the past few weeks, there has been an interesting evolution of climate policy in the U.S. Congress, and that is due to the grassroots efforts, I guess, of a group called the Sunrise Movement, and it basically has to do with this concept of a Green New Deal. Now, Mariah, you guys put up a show a few weeks ago where you began the discussion of the Green New Deal, right?
Yeah, DR laid out a lot of the, it's called the New Deal for the 21st Century, and DR gave us a lot of great detail about what was in that New Deal. So that's a great podcast to reference if you want some of the background about that.
Right, so that's up on the show page. I mean, you go to Podbean or Stitcher, you can find that. It's got, a couple weeks ago, it's got an obvious name. But the Green New Deal, if you haven't heard that podcast yet, is basically a slogan. A Green New Deal is a slogan with the... what's behind it is that the incoming freshman Democrats, many of them women, God bless them, many of them women, particularly led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are demanding a special committee, right? DR, correct me if I say anything wrong, right? A special committee that is mandated to go ahead and construct a legislative agenda, which is, the details are still in the making, but a detailed legislative agenda basically to get the United States off fossil fuels in a remarkably short time, essentially to put the country on a World War II kind of footing to attack climate change. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. According to the Sunrise Movement, now there are at least 15 Democratic members of Congress who have expressed a willingness to support the forming of a special Green New Deal committee. One of the newest supporters is Representative Shelley Pingree of Maine, and among the other roster of supporters is the legendary civil rights leader and congressman from Georgia, John Lewis, and also a number of other prominent climate hawks, most notably Ted Lieu of California and Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. Also according to Think Progress, Yana Presley, the newly elected representative from Massachusetts, has also signaled support as well for the formation of a special committee to craft a Green New Deal, essentially.
Why do you think that a special committee is an advantage over the existing committees? Right? We have a lot of with guys from New Jersey that have been there a very long time leading committees on energy. Right? Why not let them do it?
Well, I think part of the reason and part of the concern is that there's a desire to have members of the select committee who have specifically rejected any campaign contributions from the fossil fuel industry. There have been a number of controversies surrounding a number of members of Congress who are not deniers and are not associated politically with a denialist party, but who have nevertheless accepted campaign contributions from the fossil fuel industry, fossil fuel tied PACs and what have you. And the desire is to have members of this new select committee to have a clean slate that is going to be not just generally pro clean energy, but specifically opposed to the fossil fuel industry. So that's why the belief is that why a special committee is needed.
And do you think so? I got to ask. Does that? I mean, I think it's the right thing to have this committee. But when you say that, all of a sudden I start thinking of the French Revolution and kind of purity tests, right? Is that that we no longer want to trust the guy who's been, you know, kind of on your side, but taking fossil fuel monies for a while. Does that give you pause at all?
It's an interesting question. I do get the point that, you know, it could get into issues of purity tests. But on the other hand, it does go back to, again, where Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and other and other new members mm-hmm. of Congress derive their political support from. They derive their political support from people who, among other things, oppose what they call, to use Cenk Uygur's term for the Young Turks, what they call corporate Democrats.
Right.
And the belief is, and there are some activists, some climate activists, who have argued that corporate Democrats are only slightly less obstructionist than Republicans when it comes to taking the full measure right. of moving the country towards clean energy and away from fossil fuels. So I see both sides of the argument.
No, and I think that the dedicated committee with the new people, so of course many of the new members of Congress want to be on that committee, I think that gives them a platform. It's a politically shrewd to have your own new platform, as long and I think that they are able to see the problem in a new way that people that have been around a while, just by virtue of having been around a while, you know, are precluded from that. Right? I mean, so I think it's a good thing. My concern is that this committee will be formed, but it won't have any legislative authority. So I think that's what they did in Massachusetts. They had the special green global warming committee, but it couldn't propose any legislation. Right. So you have sort of this window dressing of now maybe I'm wrong on that, but you got to be careful in the formation of these things. I mean, what's the way you're really going to get legislation? But anyway, so interesting. So there's this committee. Do you think we got 15 people backing it now, right? And do you think it's changed much of the I don't know, the concept in Congress? I mean, they're actually talking about this stuff now. That's a big change, right? About climate change.
I definitely think that it is something of a game changer in terms of the conversation. Obviously it remains to be seen, you know, how things will go. You know, the old thing about playing things out and seeing how they go, but it is going to be interesting to see if there will be a sort of a conflict of visions between people who say that the best way to decarbonize the economy is through a Green New Deal and people who argue that all you need to do is essentially put a price on carbon and that will take care of things. And to that end, there's a bit of a controversy, or I guess a potential controversy, in terms of a new bit of legislation. I believe it's called the Energy Innovation Act, or Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. This is apparently the first bipartisan carbon pricing legislation since the Boxer-Warner-Lieberman Senate bill in 2008. Mm-hmm. And it's been co-sponsored by Ted Deutch of Florida, the Democrat, and Francis Rooney and Brian Fitzpatrick, who are Republicans from Florida and Pennsylvania, respectively. And it's basically a fee and dividend bill that will basically put a gradually right. I think it sets the price at $15 a ton of CO2 and then rises gradually by $10 per year. And the reason why I say it's potential controversy is that you can easily see a scenario, or at least I can easily see a scenario, in which a critical mass of Republicans and non-progressive Democrats basically say that, oh no, the Green New Deal is too much big government. It's a government power grab. Too much money going to too much power going to bureaucrats. But this is the midpoint. This is the sort of like what happened in 1994, where Republicans and some centrist Democrats started talking about what we now know as Obamacare mm-hmm. as the midpoint to Hillary Care, or the midpoint mm-hmm. to a single payer healthcare system. Mm-hmm. That this becomes the compromise position rather than a Green New Deal, when it can be argued that the Green New Deal, more so than a carbon tax, does what the science says, is the full measure, and a carbon tax being less so.
I think there's two things here. One, the phrase of, you know, something that meets the scale of the problem is what mm-hmm. I keep hearing. Dear listener, if you're not familiar, the scope of the Green New Deal goals is really quite impressive, right? Within 10 years, we're supposed to have all of energy coming from renewable sources. I mean, that all by itself is a huge deal. So the underlying points in the Green New Deal, so the stuff the committee's supposed to work on is quite challenging and is pretty far out. In fact, includes things like job guarantees, right? I read something on Cognizante, the WBUR website, Fred Ewart, I think, wrote it. And basically, he's talking about this the yellow vest movement over in France. Did either of you see that? Mm-hmm. So it turns out that Macron in France is doing the right thing and trying to put a tax on gasoline, right? Basically a carbon tax on gasoline. And there's this huge blowback of basically guys, but they're all putting on their protective vests that they that the French government forces them to carry around in their cars, these sort of yellow reflective vests. So they're the yellow vest movement. But the case that was being made in the blog post was that this is an indicator that if you don't do climate policy properly, in fact, pass a climate, a carbon tax bill, you're going to hurt some people, and they're going to be mad, and they're going to blow back. So whatever you design has to be very equitable, and you have to think about it carefully. And so this Green New Deal now needs to think about transitioning coal workers, right, or transitioning people that are hurt, finding ways to take care of less represented, disadvantaged communities, all that kind of stuff. And part of that is providing green jobs. And so, I don't know, it is a huge proposal, but to your point, it matches the scale of the problem. So if we go back. Go ahead.
Well, so it matches not only, but I think just to emphasize, it matches the scale of the problem, but it's also really focused on making sure that fossil fuel workers, working class communities, and communities of color equitably share the benefits of the transition. And I think that's very, very important. A lot of past initiatives, well, particularly past environmental initiatives, have forgotten that part of it or left that out. And you're right, you end up getting blowback, and you can't succeed if you haven't taken everyone along with you.
Right.
And it's also, just to emphasize, it's aggressive. It's definitely being touted as a very aggressive policy. And to DR's point, a less aggressive policy, I think, would have been fine 20 years ago, right? We had time then. We could have done something that was a little less aggressive, a little bit more within the realm. But, you know, I'm a marathon runner, and I have time goals I want to meet for my marathon. And if I walk the first 10 miles of a marathon, I'm going to have to run a whole lot faster for the rest of those, for that other, 16.2 miles, if I want to get my time goals. And so we're at that 10 mile mark where we've been walking. Well, we're really a lot further than the 10 mile mark, but we've been walking for a long time, and we need something aggressive. And the last podcast that DR, you had a great point you made about, when we were trying to go to the moon and JFK wanted to put us on the moon, he didn't say, let's do it in a bipartisan way and let's go after it 50%. You just have to go all in when you want something to succeed, because if you water it down, it's not going to happen.
Right. Well, I'm just intrigued with this whole concept of that all of a sudden, and to your point, Mariah, is that, is a carbon tax enough? Is it so late in the game that just putting a price on carbon is adequate to get us where we need to be as fast as we need to be? Or do things need to be mandated, to enforced to happen in a way? I guess that's an interesting debate, which I'm still trying to get my head around. I'm afraid that the carbon tax is not enough, but you'd like to think it is. DR, you're a carbon tax guy. Do you think the carbon tax is still enough? Mariah shaking her head. Everyone who's listening, Mariah shaking her head right now.
I do not think it's enough. Well, I think it's really important. Yeah.
But not so, okay. Then we'll go to Mariah.
It's part of the solution, but it obviously is not the whole solution. What I fear is a scenario where we may end up with half measures, simply as a consequence of the public possibly not getting it. I think about this in the context of, the discussion as to whether or not there should be a Green New Deal in Massachusetts. Craig Altimos of 350 Mass Action has had a great piece in Commonwealth Magazine talking about a Green New Deal in Massachusetts. And my response to the piece as I read it was that in order to have a Green New Deal in Massachusetts or any state, you would have to have a populace that is not going to buy into anti-tax demagoguery, because the reality is, if we're going to have a Green New Deal, it's going to require taxes to build the infrastructure, to build green infrastructure. It's going to require regulations to encourage people to get into EVs and get out of gas-guzzling cars. And can you think of any state in this country in which a critical mass of citizens are not susceptible to anti-tax rhetoric? Look at Massachusetts. We still have Prop 2.5 on the books. Look at California, the supposedly blue progressive California. They still got Proposition 13 on the books. Right. Look at Vermont, where because of anti-tax demagoguery, they couldn't get single payer. Is there any state that in which a critical mass of residents resists anti-tax demagoguery? And if the answer is no, I'm afraid we probably don't have a state that is willing to take the full measure of going towards a statewide Green New Deal.
But does that mean that so let me ask Mariah, what is a carbon tax lacking that a Green New Deal would drive? And what's the secret sauce in the Green New Deal?
Well, okay, so the carbon tax, the carbon price, and again, I think carbon price is definitely one of the tools we need in the toolbox, for sure. It relies, however, on people's capacity to govern themselves beyond, like, within the restrictions of market rule, right? So we're trusting that people will, that the carbon tax will help keep your carbon expenditures in check, but there's no mandates. It's not, you can still pollute. You just have to pay a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And if you know that you're going to earn a lot more money by continuing to pollute, you're willing to take that blue on black, right? It doesn't make much difference. Whereas the Green New Deal, it's back to my original point, what I was saying before, it's we're past the point where we can trust people to do this themselves. I think we're at the point where it's like, we just need someone to tell us this is how it's got to be, and you're going to do this. And I wouldn't normally, that's not how I think
that we sounds
should.
Like a
yeah.
Kind of scary.
I think we're just at the point where it's something, it's like being told we have to wear seatbelts. If we don't wear our seatbelts, we die, right? I mean, it's controversial. Nobody wants to be told what to do. But if we don't do it, the consequences are dire.
I mean, do you think so one thing is, your argument is the one that I've heard in the past, is that a cap and trade system caps emissions, right? And you get the emissions reduction that you want, whereas a carbon tax caps your economic, you understand the economics, but your emissions can do whatever they want within the market. And if people want to pay the tax, they can emit more carbon, right? So what you're saying is we need a cap on emissions, right? And we need to achieve that, one tool of which is a carbon price, but the other is just to say you will not emit more than this much carbon dioxide. Kind of.
Yeah. I mean, for sure, a cap is good.
Well, I'm not saying cap and trade. I'm just saying that those are the. The point you're making is the carbon tax allows you to buy as much carbon dioxide, emit as much carbon dioxide as you can pay for, right? And we're past the point where that's acceptable, right? We cannot emit the carbon dioxide, so we have to somehow put a limit on the carbon emissions through some other law.
We don't have the luxury of choice really anymore.
Interesting.
That's a hard line to take, and you know, maybe that's just my mood tonight. Maybe if you ask me tomorrow, I'd be like,
there was some article I saw in the newspaper a couple of years ago about other instances in history where there were at the time, I guess, weather problems, right, or long droughts, or, you know, somebody in China where the crops fail for 5 years in a row. And what you end up with is the emperor starts telling people what to do, right? And so when you say, well, we just need someone to tell us not to emit carbon anymore, all of a sudden you say, oh, my God, we're going to end up. I mean, that's the simplest way. The Chinese are doing it because President Xi can just tell everybody what they want, right? There's no discussion anymore.
I guess I kind of look at it in a management situation. You really want to have, it's good to have sort of a balance between top down and bottom up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and often you want to have as much coming from the bottom up. You want to have a lot of feedback from your employees and participation and all of that. But in a situation of an emergency, You just need someone in control telling you, this is what's got to happen. We're doing it this way. Go here, go there, go there. And they have to be a good decision maker, and they have to, but if it's an emergency, you know, you don't want consensus building when the building is burning down.
Well, you know, I got another literary reference for you. Did you ever read a book? There's a book about the USS Essex, which was the prototype for Moby Dick, right? It was a U.S. whale ship that was hit by a whale and sunk in the 1820s as a boat out of Nantucket. Anyway, long and short, I mean, these guys end up in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and the captain is a consensus builder in the life raft, right? So he's listening to all the guys, and all the guys are arguing about should they sail east or west, right? And he finally goes with the group consensus, even though he thinks they ought to sail towards South America, they all decide to sail in the other direction, and they end up eating the smallest people in the life raft, right? I mean, the sort of consensus, the consensus leader, there's a situation where that's a good thing, and there's a situation where the guy who just tells you what to do is also very valuable.
Right. But we don't want to be eating each other for lunch. Too long.
But it's a scary prospect because climate change pushes society towards that kind of a wish, right, for someone to take control and fix it. Right, which is what they said about Mussolini, right? So I'm not saying you're urging us to go way, Mariah.
I also don't think it's climate change that's pushed us that way. I think it's decades of lies from the fossil fuel industry that made us miss our window, that made us lose our opportunity to do this in a way that was consensus building.
Absolutely. No, that's also true. That's also true. So tell me, so... Do you think that net, when, oh my God, we're already over 20 minutes, we're going to have to, do you think that net, if there is this committee in the House of Representatives and it puts out a nice plan to decarbonize everything and it goes nowhere because the party of the oil party owns the White House and the Senate, do you think we're better off for having done this? Is it a net win to have this legislation and lose because it's not going to go anywhere? Or do you sort of wait until maybe you have the Senate and the presidency? I know what I think. What do you guys think?
I think it's worth it. I mean, what's the old saying that if you reach for the moon, even if you don't grab it, you might catch a few stars, that sort of thing? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, again, to ironically enough, to quote Donald Trump, what do you have to lose?
We don't quote Donald Trump on this show. No, I mean, Mariah, I think, yes, I think you're better off laying it out. You then become a target, and they'll do to the Green New Deal what they did to Hillary Clinton's health care plan, right? The detail plan gets picked apart in every little tiny detail, the horribleness of this little clause. But on the other hand, at least you're showing people what you would do, and I think it builds for the next Congress. Do you think, Mariah, what do you think? Is it a good thing to do?
I think talking about it at least right now and planting the seeds is probably a good start. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that we can get much through.
No,
at least for the next couple of years, you know? So.
Well, I mean, I guess you have to assume that whatever the House bills with his Green New Deal committee is going to die in this session. It's not going to get passed, right?
Yeah.
I think you have to make the case that you are better off galvanizing, finding out who supports it, and having something to so that the people that primary the Democrats in the 2020 election have some talking point. Right? They say, we want the Green New Deal. Remember that bill you had? We're going to support that. I think that's the only way we can go forward with this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do I get the last word?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'll take the last word. I got it this week. All right. So everyone listening, you can catch links to some of the stuff we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. We're on Facebook. It's @massclimateaction. We're on all of the assorted podcast distribution channels. And so we'll close where we always close. That we recognize the necessity of personal accountability. We accept responsibility for building a durable future. And because it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon, plus capping all those emissions like we just talked about. Right, guys? Anyway, thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thank you so much for your wisdom and insight.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
very cool.